Welcome to the Improv in Practice podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Wilson, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on improvised theater with Synergy Theater. You can find Synergy Theater's classes, workshops, performances, and more at synergytheater.com. That's S-Y-N-E-R-G-Y theater.com. Okay, lights down, curtain up. Hello, improvisers. It is Saturday, July 6th, 2024, as I record this. We are so pleased to bring you a first for our podcast today, our first live interview. Val and I sit down with Lynn Shields, veteran cast member of Synergy Theater and the creator and director of Spontaneous Soap, which opens Thursday, July 18th at the Lesher Center in Walnut Creek. We talk about what happened at the open rehearsal and the challenges faced by the cast for this unique show. Go to synergytheater.com for your tickets. Okay, on to the interview.
You look beautiful, by the way. Oh, I love this color on you.
I'm going out, so I did my hair.
Yeah,
you're beautiful.
I thought you did this for us. I'm just kidding.
Well, it's such a treat to be here in person with the two of you and have eyes on. Yeah. Lynn, you have a wonderful coral peach sweater on. And Val and I were just talking about Highway 1, and she has a tattoo on her wrist, y'all. Tell us about your tattoo, Val. I have to hear this story.
I still love driving Highway 1 from my house in South City, and I drop down to Highway 1 and I just hit the coast. So I get to Santa Cruz, and one day, as soon as I landed in Santa Cruz, there was a tattoo shop there. And I'm like, hey, why not?
Oh my gosh.
So I just drove in, and there was nobody in the shop except a bulldog. So this bulldog's looking at me, and I'm like, hello. And I just stood there looking around, and finally guy came up and he said, hey. Like, hey, can you do a Highway 1 tattoo? And he said, do you have a design? I said, no. I said, you know what a Highway 1 sign looks like. So that's what he did. And I said, can you add wings? So now it's my flying Highway 1. He said the dog actually owned the tattoo shop. Like, that's interesting.
Do you remember the dog's name?
It was a man's name. Like, it was very normal. Like Robert.
Stanley.
Yeah. It was like, this is Robert's shop. Oh, are you Robert? No, that's Robert. So that's my story, and I've never told that before.
You saw a tattoo shop, A plus B plus C.
I
love that. What a great, great story.
Yeah, and we all have stories.
Well, yes, but Val is so adventurous. I love Val's sense of excitement and how she will just get in her truck and on the road and go and have these experiences. And improv seems like adventure in itself for those of us who go and we sit in the audience and we watch Lynn and Synergy Theater embark on these incredible stories and deliver these stories to us in full-length plays on the spot. And we're here to talk to Lynn and Val today about Spontaneous Soap, which Lynn, sitting here next to me, I'm happy to say, is the creator and director of. And you guys just had a dress rehearsal.
We had an open rehearsal.
Open rehearsal.
Yeah, and which means that we invite people in to see a somewhat rough version. We're not quite stage ready yet, to come in, see it. And then after the show's over, we sit around and get their feedback, which is always very helpful.
How did it go?
Well, may I turn it to you, Val, since you were in the audience?
I have to say that was the largest group of people I've seen so far from all the open rehearsals. So it was amazing. And there were a lot of new people who'd never been to an open rehearsal. So it was almost like being at Lesher again, trying to explain to the audience, well, here's suggestion form and here's where you sit and you're not going to be called up. It was almost like being at a live show. There was that many people. It was
at least 30.
It was a huge amount.
Yeah.
We filled that studio and they loved it.
What was it like to be on the receiving end of that, Lynn?
And that extra energy with the audience, they were with us. When you feel that as a performer, it feeds you. there's something that happens at open rehearsal almost every time, and we're nervous. A little more nervous, I think, than even on stage, because it's such a small setting and we're not quite ready. We're not in costume. We don't have the set. And we did speed up a little. We basically did 8 shows in 1. We just had so much content. And it's always good because then we get it out of our system. The Synergy improvisers are so good. And I think they did a really good job. We just put a lot out to the audience, but they stayed with us.
Well, talk more about that. As far as story elements go in the story, what are you talking about?
Okay, there's certain tropes with soap operas. There's usually love triangles and strangers who turn out to be relatives or identical twins or comas or coming back from the dead, multiple marriages and divorce. Okay. All of those things are tropes of soap operas. If you watch an actual soap opera, those things do happen, but typically not all in one show.
You get it.
And so we were throwing love interests, and everyone was in a convent at one point. Everyone was plotting the murder of everybody else. It was fun, but my mantra during the directing process has been, we can slow down because we have storylines, and the storylines don't have to be resolved before the show ends. And that's what's different.
Yes.
Because it's not a one play and then it's over and then there's a new play the next show. Mm-hmm. This is just like a soap opera, a continuation. So one episode, one show picks up from the next. Mm-hmm. Because another thing about soap operas are cliffhangers.
Oh, if I had one complaint about my memories of making it home from school in time to see a certain soap opera every day was the way they would leave me hanging. I felt it felt so good, but so torturous at the same time. And I've been talking to the people that I work with about the show, that it's based on the soap opera genre. And you can see in their eyes that they're remembering back to when they first watched a soap opera with a family member and it became a tradition. You could tell that it felt good to remember what it was like to sit down and watch a soap opera at the same time every day, because I didn't have a DVR, right? At the time, so you had to be there. I know this is strange for some of you listening. Wait, what? Yeah, you had to be seated in front of the TV in time to turn it on. And then you had to wait through the commercials as well. Couldn't fast forward through those. This is my experience. You and I, Lynn, have talked before about your inspiration for the show. And you said, yeah, I just have these great, great memories of watching soap operas.
My grandmother and my mother were fans of The Guiding Light and As the World Turns, which are two of the first soap operas that I think one of them was on radio even before television. And so, especially during the summers when I would be home every day from school, I would get glued. Those particular shows were not on after school. And there was always a little grieving process when the summer ended. And then next summer would come and, oh, same characters, married to a different person, possibly. But you could just catch right up. That was, I don't know, there's something like coming home when any given time you can turn on the TV and they may be a little older, but they're the same characters. Also, it's something that people would share. I mean, much like I think it's not that different now with certain television shows, mm-hmm. You know, you stand around the proverbial water cooler, mm-hmm. and you talk about what happened.
Yeah.
But this was on a daily basis.
Right.
You didn't have to wait till next week.
And shows that aren't typified as soap shows, they are, right? The shows that are most popular on TV or streaming right now, they're soap shows. There's an element of that type of drama, and people, yeah, they still, they do talk about it. Yeah.
Even the reality TV is very maybe more soapish than anything.
Well, what do you hope that the audience feels while watching the show?
I would love them to be truly invested in the characters. We all have our favorites in our soap operas. They are a bit larger than life. They're not your typical person you meet on the street because we are characters. But I would love the audience to get invested, have fun most of all. That's always my number one, is just I want the audience to have fun and feel like the election and the economy and all the things that we have to think about in our lives, I'd like that all to just go away and be transported to a different time and place and just be able to immerse themselves into a different world. And also hoping that they feel comfortable enough to emote. I mean, I remember watching the soap operas as a kid and going, oh, don't you dare marry him, Cricket. I want people to be able to really feel that they're part of the show.
Yeah, I'm not one to like yell at the TV, but as close as I ever got was watching a soap where one character was going to make a horrible decision. And because I knew what they didn't know, that was something that soap operas did very well, is that they would convey to the audience exactly what they wanted the audience to know and keep the characters in the dark that were in the show. And that conflict between what this audience knew and what the characters knew was delicious. I came very close to yelling at the TV. Very, very close. So how have you directed the Synergy cast differently for this show? We talked about, hey, you can slow down. We don't have to wrap up this thread like we're used to. We have next, in quotes, episode. What other different direction have you had to give the cast?
The most different thing, the most challenging for us as improvisers has been that, first of all, we're playing the same character. So it's not like we're making up new characters all the time. We have one character. And the storylines continue. And I very purposely asked for, let's see, we've done 8 rehearsals. I've asked the cast to keep evolving from episode to episode. And that's challenging. It's like, how do I have a character arc, even though I'm the same character? How do I move past and into another storyline? How do I not get stuck? And the reason I had us do that is because that's how the show's going to be. I wanted the cast included to have the experience of what is it like to do, rather than one 90-minute play, to do 8 incomplete plays, but yet that have some resolution. So you're left hanging, but in a pleasant way, if that makes sense.
In that delicious,
in that, oh, I want more.
Right. Oh, delicious. Oh my gosh. I'm going to go out in the lobby of the Lecture Center right outside the Vukasan Theater and get myself another ticket to the next show, kind of way.
That's, you just said my dream. Yeah. So that's very, very different. And one of the challenges is to give some structure to it. We put the townspeople of Beaver Pines, which is the name of the show, the soap opera, into what we're calling pods. So that, okay, you 4 people are going to have a storyline together, just to give us some structure. And we've done that to a degree in shows before, but the challenge this time was allowing ourselves to get out of the pods, and they've done a great job.
What were some early challenges?
That was the main thing of giving structure to something that is relatively unstructured compared to most Synergy shows. We are completely unscripted always, but we do have a structure, one that Ken, in fact, wrote, Ken Adams, our artistic director. And it's called Play by Play. And while it's not scripted, we do know that at a certain time in the first act, around the 25-minute mark, something needs to happen that's going to be the question of the play. It felt at first like we're flying without a safety net. Because it's like, no, we're just going to keep telling the story. And most shows that we do, we have character 1 and character 2, which will be the main characters of the entire play. Soap operas are ensembles. There's no one star. There may be someone like Susan Lucci who rises to the top, mm-hmm. right? But if you watch the show, everybody gets equal time. There isn't a character 1 and character 2. There might be a character 1 and character 2, if you will, that emerges out of a storyline. storyline, but there's several storylines. The main people can change. So that was really something that we had to get used to. Then it was, okay, how do we give some structure to something that is not nearly as structured as we're used to? We figured it out collaboratively. This has been a collaboration for sure. Lots of people had great ideas. Maybe we tried this, maybe we did that. And it's come together. I'm really happy with it.
I'm thinking about maybe a challenge that I would have would be, okay, I have this character that I've established that I really like, that I am carrying forward. How are you not planning ahead? Because this is improvised theater. This is unscripted. So that when you go into the next show and you're live and you're unscripted, you don't come into a scene with any pre-scripted ideas.
Well, you never know what gift your fellow improviser is going to give you. Let's say Mary goes into a scene with her doctor and her maybe if they're planning ahead, they're thinking, okay, I'm going to be pregnant. And the doctor says, bad news, you're sterile. Okay, well, that's out the door. So you never know. And again, I call them gifts because they are, because that's what keeps it spontaneous and fun and on our toes. The other thing is we have audience suggestions. And how we're doing that is we're having audience members before the show write lines of dialogue for us. And then we are going to just spontaneously, whenever we feel like it or want a little help, we'll pick one of those lines of dialogue. And that will be our next line of dialogue. So you can't really plan ahead because you could be saying something so absurd. One of the suggestions at open rehearsal was, got any of that wacky tabacky? Okay. And the person who got it didn't even know what that was. One of our funniest ones, to be honest, is, and this was Griffin, your son, came in to a scene and he just pulls a piece of paper and says to Elise, the octopus has arrived. Okay, what do you do with that? Well, it turned out the whole entire show was about this octopus that could predict pregnancy and genetics. It ended up possessing a Rasta. I mean, it was really funny. It was all based on this audience suggestion. And who plans that, right? Oh, I'm going to come in as an octopus. So, and Ken was in love with octopus, by the way. It was, yeah.
That's amazing. And Val, you're having trouble not falling on the floor in laughter.
That's exactly what happened during open rehearsal. Is Griffin pulled out something again. This was to Valerie. And she, at that point, Valerie had become a nun. And she lost it. She cracked up and she never does that.
Griffin says, I caught you making out with the gardener.
And she lost it. And that was just such a gift. I was crying with laughter. Yeah. These sentences that are going to come out of the blue. Are you very nervous, Lynn?
No, it's almost like, well, it's not my fault. I didn't write this line. It's a puzzle, a challenge. Like, oh, how are we going to make this part of the show?
And
we really try. I mean, sometimes it's hard to take something that's so out there. And we really do want to honor it. And some seem like they were written for that particular scene at that particular moment, but some aren't. So I think that's really fun. And I know the audience loves it, to basically be writing part of a script of a play, even though there's no script. It's like, oh, that's my line. I wrote that. And that's fun for the audience too.
Yes. When you walk into the Vukasin Theater at the Lesher Center in Walnut Creek, and the first show is July 18th, you walk in, you give the nice usher your ticket, and then on the table will be a place for the audience to write out their line of dialogue, and they'll put it in a box, and then they'll go and they'll take their seat. And the box ends up on the stage, and any improviser, is it at any time?
At any time. And a suggestion that came up during the open rehearsal is to have even another suggestion. We are thinking of having the audience write down something they associate with 1960, which is when the show takes place. So it might be a Slinky or Swanson's TV dinner or Jell-O brand Jell-O, whatever it might be.
Oh, Jell-O.
So that we can also work that in just for fun and to also honor the era.
I'm curious why you picked the 60s and not modern day for the era for the show. Please again mention the name of the place where this takes place, or the name of the soap opera?
The soap opera is the name of the town, which is called Beaver Pine. I chose 1960 for a couple of reasons. One was because that's when I was watching soap operas, was in the 60s and the 70s. I love that era. There was a lot of improvement that needed to be had in the world in that era, but I loved the aesthetic and I love the style. I love the fashion, and I have learned to really love the style of mid-century modern, specifically atomic. I didn't even know that phrase before I started researching for the set, but there's a certain color scheme and a certain look, colored glass. I've had a ball trying to create this 1960s set. And some of the stuff that you'll see on stage is vintage. It's from 1960.
Wow, I cannot wait. And Val and I are both looking at each other like, oh, well, we'll store those for you guys whenever you run out of storage space.
Unfortunately, one of the vintage phones got cracked during rehearsal.
Oh, so, no.
Yeah, that's the problem with 1960. It's old stuff. I do have some cool furniture and glassware, barware. Everything else is in the style of mid-century modern. That was the other reason I picked 1960.
Whoa. Now, I remember you saying that your home was full of the stuff, is still full of the stuff, overflow. And is it you and Eileen that are working on the sets?
The furniture is still there. And now it's flooded into another room. Most of the set is the furniture. Then we're going to have, and this was Eileen's idea, three canvases that we're going to hang from the ceiling. They're going to be backdrops that match the color scheme.
Oh, how perfect.
Yeah. And that was Eileen's idea completely. Mm-hmm.
Now, Eileen Tumlin is part of the Synergy Theater cast. And in her day job, she is an architect. So she does have a professional eye, which you can tell when she brings that to the set design for each show. And each show has had such a different set design. Mm-hmm. Val and I, in our day jobs, we both work in construction and we have an appreciation of design. And
design and finishes. And I can tell the labor involved to build the set. Some of them are so complex. The last show, though, it was mostly furniture.
The set was the costumes.
Right.
In the last show, My Dearest Love.
That's true.
And also, the dresses were so huge, there was no room for furniture.
Oh, for My Dearest Love, the cast looked incredible. The hair, the dresses. Now, My Dearest Love took place, what would you say? Late 1800s.
1800s France.
France.
18th century, yes. Marie Antoinette. I think exactly. Marie Antoinette. Okay. The tall hair and the wide hipped.
And that's another thing that I really appreciate, and I know Val does too, is all the costuming that goes on as well. Let's talk about the 1960s attire that you must have found.
Think June Cleaver, Donna Reed, I Love Lucy.
Very wholesome.
Yeah. Right. So a lot of the fit and flare dresses.
Audrey Hepburn, if I could dress like anyone, it would be her day to day.
The men, fedoras, cardigans, suits was what men wore. I mean, people dressed up. People wore hats, gloves.
It was, even though it was the, in quotes, the 60s, people did dress up when you went out.
It's not the 60s as in hippie. It's 1960. So it's like late 50s. We're not yet hippies. We're still pretty post-World War II mentality, traditional housewife, stay at home. Women who had been in the workforce during the war were back home, bored. And that's why soap operas were geared toward women.
Now, that era is not known for its diversity of characters. But I also know that Synergy always pays attention to the importance in being inclusive. And your audience is modern and has modern sensibilities, and they will bring those expectations to the show. How, as I know you will, how are you making sure to cater to both your own modern sensibilities and then also the audience? It could also be that there are people in the audience that don't remember the 60s of that time.
Definitely. In fact, most of the cast doesn't remember the 60s. There's maybe four of us. One of the things that we do when we're doing a show that is in a different era is give what's going on historically. So we had civil rights. Kennedy was newly president. The birth control pill was just FDA approved and not widely available. Women were in traditional roles. And Betty Friedan wrote about the woman problem and how women were pretty unfulfilled, being maybe wives and mothers, but there was so much more to do. It was a time where a lot of women were being prescribed medications, uppers, downers, in order to just get through the day. And then there were things that weren't talked about, like homosexuality. I mean, there were just as many homosexuals then as now. It's just, it didn't get talked about. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we want to do in our show is bring that out in the open. It's hard with a comedy, but we make the effort and we'll continue to make the effort to bring up women's rights or lack thereof. My character is an owner of a bank, which would be very unusual, but that also gives us a chance to bring up women's issues and the difficulty that women of Beaver Pines are having. We also have a character who is identified as gay. That will come out, and how hard it is for this character in 1960 to be a gay man.
As part of the audience, I always feel that the diversity of characters are on display on stage, both in the people that the Synergy cast portrays, and then also in the storylines as well. And I appreciate that. And because Synergy Theater does do a lot of period pieces, which are wonderful, but with modern sensibilities, I think it's very well done. Very well done. Wouldn't you say, Val?
Oh, yes. So well done. I mean, that's why I'm such a huge fan of Synergy. Just their sheer diversity and the way that they can take a different genre and still make it modern and feel fresh to us in 2024. That's amazing. And this started as an online show, right, Lynn?
Yeah. The thing about soap operas is they really did attack the topics of the day and were bold in the topics they choose. I mean, in the earlier days, it was much more unusual to be talking about things like rape, abortion, addiction. All of those things were brought up in soap operas. It's part of the genre to bring up what's mm-hmm. happening.
Yeah, in doing just a little bit of research, I found that soap operas were some of the first shows that did bring issues that had not been brought before their audiences, and they caught a lot of flack for it, but they didn't back down.
And part of that was because, again, especially early on, soap operas are not what they used to be. They're not nearly as popular for many, many reasons. But you had women who, intelligent women interested in what was going on in the world. And the people who were writing the soap operas were attuned to that. They were giving the audience, mainly women, what they wanted. And yeah, they wanted romance and intrigue and all that. But they also wanted to identify. I'm going through something like that.
In coming up with your character choice, Lynn, is there someone from your own background that you would place as a soap opera fan in the 60s that you would put on a show especially for, that you would play a character especially for, someone that they could identify with?
That's such a great question. I chose a character who was very unlike the women in terms of, I have a traditional mom. I know, like, she wanted to go to college, but she couldn't. There were two girls and a boy. The boy went to college. That's just how it was in those days. My mom was born in the 1920s. It was mm-hmm. a long time ago. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to be someone that they, like my mother and my grandmother, couldn't be, because they were strong, intelligent, funny women. But where could they possibly channel it? My mom wanted to be a journalist. So I chose this bank owner. It's a very different role to honor what the women who came before my generation and before theirs couldn't do. The fact that I went to college and my mom passed away before I had my career, but I think she would have been so, or is, from wherever she is, so thrilled that I broke out of traditional roles and got to use my education and have an education.
And I bet that your character as the bank owner would be your mom's favorite. I know she would be so impressed and proud. And just think everything that you've done, Lynn, to this show is so impressive. It's going to be incredible. And I know Val will back me up on this.
Oh, absolutely.
I have a question, and that is, I found the pamphlet or the postcard that Synergy has been handing out to people that has spontaneous soap on the cover. And it's a picture of you and Ken and two other characters. And you all have this, I don't, Lynn, maybe you can describe the looks on your faces. It's not what I would expect.
Well, okay. So we took that picture when we were doing Valerie's show, The Mating Game. Oh. And Ken, okay, so this was months and months before I even knew what era it was going to be. Okay, so I knew it was going to be 50s or 60s. No one had costumes. And Ken just said, hey, if you can bring some 1950, 1960 costume, we're going to take a photo for the marketing. I happened to have a couple of coats left over from Hitchcock. So I grabbed those. Ken had a funny wig. I had a dress from another show. So we put it together and we just said, let's look really dramatic. And that's what you saw, us all just looking like we're about to kill somebody. That's not what the show's going to look like. But really, that's the truth.
That explains it. Because when I see the postcard, I'm thinking, man, did they have a bad day?
That was our drama look.
Val, do you want to describe it as well?
That picture has been puzzling me for the longest time. I think you have some really interesting characters in town.
There's 12 of us. And that's the other thing. This is a very big cast.
Pick three.
Okay. Well, I'm just
at random.
The first one that came to mind is Beverly Vandergland, who's played by Eileen. And she owns a gas station. So another woman who's out of the norm, and she's a widow whose husband died in a plane crash, but whose body was never found.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then there is Jack, who has no last name. He is played by Griffin. Jack is a member of the Rollers gang, which is a bicycle gang. Not a motorcycle gang.
It's a bicycle gang.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And storylines change, but one of the things he's known for is being able to get contraband of basically any kind for anybody. So he sometimes hangs out in alleys.
Well, Griffin's characters I love, and I can't wait to see his hair for this one. It, when you come to the show.
So he's a bad boy. So he's got kind of that James Dean look, right?
He can pull off any look.
Dr. Eastman, very interesting doctor. He specializes in everything, can treat everything, and isn't always the most moral of characters.
Oh, dear.
Who plays Dr. Eastman?
That is Rastu Dharaksha. He plays a villain like none other.
He's one of the best players that will play a two-faced character. Rastu's incredible.
Very
on stage. Also hardworking in that not only is Rastu a hardworking improviser, both with Synergy Theater and Berklee Improv, but as a musician.
Oh, he's a big, huge part of this show. He has helped me so much because my original idea is I wanted a keyboard to accompany us because music is so much a part of soap operas to kind of punctuate the emotion, like when you went dun-dun-dun.
Uh-huh.
So I said, Rastu, what am I going to do? I can't get a keyboardist. And you're not going to be a keyboardist because you need to be in the show. So he found an app where we have on a laptop the ability to create sounds. And we've gone through lots of different ones. There's so many that would be funny, but we have to pare it down because who will be doing the sounds are the improvisers who are not in scenes. We'll be sitting in front of the laptop and doing sound effects from the side. And that was all Rastu.
Oh, wow.
He has put so much work. He also wrote the theme song for Beaver Pines and also, like you said, a very talented improviser.
Excellent. And Val, you were able to corner Rastu at the open rehearsal. Can you tell us what you were able to record from Erastu?
Before rehearsal even started, Lynn, I went up to Erastu and I said, I just want to ask you one question, maybe at the end of rehearsal. And of course he forgot. At the very end, there was just chaos. People were leaving. You were stacking chairs. And I was wrapping up my camera. I said, Erastu, Erastu. So I dragged him outside and I asked him, what inspires you for your music?
Inspiration for my music comes from other music that I listen to, movies, art, and I guess emotional states that I can find myself in. Yeah.
Music is so much a part of his life. I mean, that's
He's a composer. That's what he does.
Yeah. He's always making music and he's very generous with his time.
He's done the music for pretty much every on stage and on Zoom show.
Another thing, as long as we're talking about Erastu, is that I have 5 large poster boards that he created because I wanted a sign for the gas station so that people knew where we were location-wise, and he designed all of them for me.
So Lynn, in closing, what would you like the audience to know before episode 1 or the first show on July 18th, that's Thursday in Walnut Creek at the Lesher Center inside the Vukasin Theater. What would you like the incoming audience to know?
I'd like them to know that they're in for a treat. They're walking into the theater as a live audience to a show. They are part of the show. If you think about television that you've watched that's been recorded live, you hear the audience. You hear them laugh. You hear them groan, and we want them to have fun. That's always the bottom line for me. Have fun, but they're also a really important part of it.
I love it.
Yep. Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you, Lynn, so much. And again, you guys are both beautiful and adventurous. And Val, you've inspired me. Hey, next time I see a tattoo shop, who knows what's going to happen? And Lynn, you inspire me every day. Thank you both so much.
Come to the show.
Yes, come to the show.
And that's our show. If you think improv sounds like fun, it is. If you think you'd like to try improv, it's easy. Just go to synergytheater.com and click on School of Improv. Synergy Theater offers beginner, advanced, and master classes. Synergy Theater is also on Facebook. Please rate, review, and follow this podcast. Your support makes a difference. Synergy Theater is a 501c3 tax-deductible nonprofit that depends on the participation of current and future star supporters and improvisers like you. Thank you.